There's a time for crying and mourning, talking and scorning, son, this ain't the time. Well, my granddaddy, he bought them sons of bitches, them Nazis and them snitches, and talking ain't what got it done. We better rise up to the power, this ain't no time for cowards. When the clock strikes a witch an hour, this ain't no time for cowards. Charlottesville, that rally wasn't you, just a bunch of damn fools mad at themselves. Say a prayer for sweet Heather Heyer, she'll never be forgotten, don't let her make you scared. We better rise up to the power, this ain't no time for cowards. When the clock strikes a witch an hour, Lord, this ain't no time for cowards. All the lessons, like you unto others, and listen to your mother, and kindness to strangers. With our children, past the color of your skin, and all of our sin, and all of our wrongs, yes they are. We better rise up to the power, this ain't no time for cowards. When the clock strikes a witch an hour, this ain't no time for cowards. This ain't no time for cowards. This ain't no time for cowards. That song called Charlottesville, and it's by Jesse Dayton. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Also on revolution.radio. And remember, Revolution Radio is a listener-supported station. They bring tons of music and talk shows and everything else, two streams of audio just about 24/7. It's well worth supporting them. They deserve your support. So head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Show them some love. Show them some support. Well, we're kind of mixing things up a little bit tonight. We are changing the order of things a little bit. Instead of my introducing my new co-host, Philip Perugio, during this first segment, Philip is going to get the entire second segment. Actually, tonight he's going to be talking to me, but from here on in, he's going to get the entire second segment. And Tonight, the first thing I'm going to play is also by Philip Perugio. It's his column, It's the Empire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. Insulated from the truth. You know, in 1933, soon after Hitler's ascent to power, the British ambassador to Germany made this assertion, and I quote, "I have the impression that the persons directing the policy of the Hitler government are not normal. Many of us, indeed, have a feeling that we are living in a country where fanatics, hooligans, and eccentrics have gotten the upper hand." Unquote. Well, fast forward to America, 2019, and what do we got? Well, not only does the president fit the bill, but one of those who work under him, sometimes overtly and sometimes covertly, and the millions who trash any dissent that's aimed at him. This is the second anniversary of the infamous Charlottesville white supremacy march and melee. What struck me then, and of course now, is the utter apathy so many of my fellow citizens had and still have over what transpired on August 11th to August 12th of 2017. Those white supremacy fanatics, are they not in these early stages similar to the Nazi mobs who first marched and then destroyed Jewish businesses, burnt down synagogues, and of course beat up or killed Jewish citizens of Germany? Do not many of them desire to hearken back to those good old days? After all, they carried those similar torches and repeated those similar mantras of blood and soil, and Jews will not replace us. Now, the real spin and sin of it all is when Trump decided to mention, after the Charlottesville street attacks between white supremacists and Antifa, he said, well, both sides have bad people and some nice people, too. So what he was doing was give a backhanded legitimacy to the neo-Nazis who marched with such vitriol. The outrage should be still be echoing throughout our nation, especially but not restricted to Jewish people. Where was the outrage coming from the Israeli government and the mainstream media? Where was Jared Kushner and his wife? Where were all those Jewish people who either worked for this administration or supported? Sadly, anyone who still resides under the Trump Republican tent, ignoring the Charlottesville truth, and of course now the El Paso shooter truth, is walking down a dangerous road. The white supremacist march to this rider most likely gave mana to Robert Bowers in Pittsburgh before he decided to go into that synagogue and kill Jews. Trump's references to those coming to our southern border as being, quote, rapists, drug dealers, and of course invaders, may have just influenced that 21-year-old to drive all the way from Dallas to do his deed in El Paso. You don't have to be a rocket scientist once you have seen that young man's writings and all his postings. Of course, the right-wing media is trying to use the Dayton, Ohio shooter as a foil to this argument. Why? Because he called himself a socialist and admired Senator Warren? The analogy is ludicrous, as she never used any such similar rhetoric of casting right-wingers as invaders coming to take away our way of life. Both shooters were obviously mentally unbalanced for them to do such terrible deeds. Yet that's even more reason for our so-called readers to tone down such rhetoric, because it stirs up emotions for violence. Check out Trump's talks and speeches since 2015 and see for yourself. All this leads to another outgrowth of this neo-Nazi fascist plague that has ripped our nation. One of the two most favorite websites that I write for regularly has been under an attack by trolls, very technically savvy ones. The site has been attacked two or three times before, costing the site masters lots of money to counteract the damage. Recently, myself and seven other writers, some of whom are much more popular than me, cannot even get our submissions to the site via email, nor can the site contact us back. I have to ask friends to submit my work via their emails. Sad. Why is this being done? Well, the site is famous for its stance against imperialism and steroid capitalism. It has also been very keen to criticize both of our two major political parties. As a baby boomer, I have never seen such overt rage directed towards anyone who stands up to this neo-Nazi fanaticism disguised as patriotic conservatism. Alas, many true conservatives and libertarians stand with we on the left, who disdain attempts to shut out our free speech. The threats to you and use of brute force is what made a wonderful and advanced society like Weimar Germany fall from grace. Does that rabbit hole await us here? Thank you.
Well, there's a lot to think about there. Thanks, Philip. And I look forward to talking about that in our second segment. Right now, I'm going to introduce our first live guest of the evening, Anthony Racine. Anthony Racine joins us from South Chicago. He is always has a lot to say. He is a prison activist. He publishes zines and also acts as a communicator with various prisoners. He's really a very interesting guy, and I'm going to try to get him on the phone right now. Here we go. So.
Evening.
Well, hello, Anthony. It's Chuck Gregory, the new American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Terrific. Well, I got an interesting piece I'd like to read from. It's entitled, Are You an Anarchist? The Answer May Surprise You. It's a common sense look at what anarchists believe in, put out by Zabalaza. It's a group, anarchist group from South Africa. Chances are you have already heard something about what anarchists, who anarchists are, and what they are supposed to believe. Chances are almost everything you have heard is nonsense. Most people seem to think that we anarchists believe in violence, chaos, and destruction, that we are against all forms of order and organization, that we are crazed nihilists who just want to blow everything up. In reality, nothing could be further from the truth. We are simply people who believe human beings are capable of behaving in a reasonable way without having to be forced to. It is really a very simple idea, but it's one that the rich and powerful have always found extremely dangerous. At their very simplest, anarchist beliefs turn on to two basic ideas. The first is that human beings are, under ordinary circumstances, about as reasonable and decent as they are allowed to be, and can organize themselves and their communities without needing to be told how. The second is that power corrupts. Most of all, anarchism is just a matter of having the courage to take the simple principles of common decency that most of us live by and to follow them through to their logical conclusions. Although this may seem, in many important ways, you are probably already an anarchist, you just don't realize it. Let's start by taking a few examples from everyday life. If there's a line to get on a crowded bus, do you wait your turn and not elbow your way past others, even if there aren't any police around? If you answered yes, then you are used to acting like an anarchist. The most basic anarchist principle is self-organization, the assumption that human beings do not need to be threatened with arrest in order to be able to come to reasonable understandings with each other or to treat each other with dignity and respect. Everyone believes they are capable of behaving reasonably themselves. If they think laws and police are necessary, it is only because they don't believe that other people are. But if you think about it, don't those people all feel exactly the same way about you? Anarchists argue that almost all the antisocial behavior which makes us think it's necessary to have armies, police, prisons, and governments to control our lives is actually caused by the systematic inequalities and injustice those armies, police, prisons, and governments make possible. It's all a vicious circle. If people are used to being treated like their opinions do not matter, they are likely to become angry and cynical, even violent, which of course makes it easy for those in power to say that their opinions do not matter. Once they understand that their opinions really do matter just as much as anyone else's, they tend to become remarkably understanding. To cut a long story short, anarchists believe that for the most part, it is power itself and the effects of power that make people stupid and irresponsible. Are you a member of a club or sports team or any other voluntary organization where decisions are not imposed by one leader, but made on the basis of general consent? If you answered yes, then you belong to an organization that works on anarchist principles. Another basic anarchist principle is voluntary association. This is simply a matter of applying democratic principles to ordinary life. The only difference is that anarchists believe it is possible to have a society in which everything is organized along these lines. All groups based on the free consent of their members, and therefore that all top-down military styles of organization like armies or bureaucracies or large corporations based on chains of command would no longer be necessary. Perhaps you don't believe that that would be possible. Perhaps you do. But every time you reach an agreement by consensus rather than threats, every time you make a voluntary arrangement with another person, come to an understanding or reach a compromise by taking due consideration of others' particular situation or needs, you are being an anarchist, even if you don't realize it. Anarchism is just the way people act when they are free to do as they choose. And when they deal with others who are equally free and therefore aware of the responsibility to others this entails. This leads to another crucial point, that while people can be reasonable and considerate when they are dealing with equals, human nature is such that they cannot be trusted to do so when given power over others. Give someone such power, they will almost always abuse it in some way or another. Do you believe that most politicians are selfish, egotistical swine who don't really care about the public interest? Do you think we live in an economic system that's stupid and unfair? If you answered yes, then you'd subscribe to the anarchist critique of today's society, at least in its broadest outlines. We anarchists believe that power corrupts, and those who spend their entire lives seeking power are the very last people who should have it. We believe that our present economic system is more likely to reward people for selfish and dishonest behavior than for being decent, caring human beings. Most people feel that way. The only difference is that most people don't think there's anything that can be done about it, or at least that this is what the faithful servants of the powerful are always most likely to insist on, anything that won't end up making things even worse. But what if that weren't true? If there really is any reason to believe this, when you can actually test that most of the usual predictions about what would happen without states or capitalism turn out to be entirely untrue. For thousands of years, people live without governments. In many parts of the world, people live outside of the control of governments today. They do not all kill each other. Mostly they just get on with their lives the same as anyone else. Of course, in a complex urban technological society, all this would be more complicated. But technology can also make all these problems a lot easier to solve. In fact, we have not even begun to think about what our lives could be like if technology were really used to benefit us all. How many hours would we really need to work in order to maintain a functional society, that is, if we got rid of all the useless and destructive occupations like telemarketers, lawyers, prison guards, financial analysts, public relations experts, bureaucrats, politicians, and turn our best scientific minds away from working on space weaponry or stock market systems to merchandising away dangerous or annoying tasks like coal mining or cleaning the bathroom and distribute the remaining work from among everyone equally? 5 hours a day? Four? Three? Two? Nobody knows because no one is even asking these kinds of questions. Anarchists think these are the very questions we should be asking. Do you really believe these things you tell your children or that your parents told you? It doesn't matter who started it. Two wrongs don't make a right. Clean up your own mess. Do unto others. Don't be mean to people just because they're different. Perhaps we should decide whether we're lying to our children when we tell them about right and wrong, or whether we're willing to take our own injunctions seriously. Because if you take these moral principles to their logical conclusions, you arrive at anarchism. Take the principle that two wrongs don't make a right. If you really took it seriously, that alone would knock away almost the entire basis for war in the criminal justice system. The same goes for sharing. We're always telling children that they have to learn to share, to be considerate of each other's needs, to help each other. Then we go off into the real world where we assume that everyone is naturally selfish and competitive. But an anarchist would point out, in fact, that we say to our children is right. Pretty much every great worthwhile achievement in human history, every discovery or accomplishment that's improved our lives has been based on cooperation and mutual aid. Even now, most of us spend more of our money on our friends and families than on ourselves, while likely not as there will always be competitive people in the world. There's no reason why society has to be based on encouraging such behavior, let alone making people compete over the basic necessities of life. That only serves the interests of people in power who want us to live in fear of one another. That's why anarchists call for a society based not only on free association, but mutual aid. The fact that most children grow up believing in anarchist morality and then gradually have to realize that the adult world doesn't really work that way. That's why so many become rebellious or alienated, even suicidal as adolescents, and finally resigned and bitter as adults, their only solace often being the ability to raise children of their own and pretend to them that the world is fair. But what if we really could start to build a world that was at least founded on principles of justice? Wouldn't that be the greatest gift to our children we could possibly give them? Do you believe that human beings are fundamentally corrupt and evil, or certain sorts of people, women, people of different skin color, ordinary people who are not rich or highly educated, are inferior specimens destined to be ruled by their betters? Remember, this is from South Africa. If you answered yes, then well, it looks like you aren't an anarchist at all. But if you answered no, then chances are already subscribed to 90% of anarchist principles and likely as not, are living your life largely in accord with them. Every time you treat another human with consideration and respect, you are being an anarchist. Every time you work out your differences with others by coming to reasonable compromise, listening to what everyone has to say rather than letting one person decide for everyone else, you are being an anarchist. Every time you have the opportunity to force someone to do something but decide to appeal to his or her sense of reason or justice, instead, you are being an anarchist. The same goes for every time you share something with a friend or decide who is going to do the dishes or do anything at all with an eye to fairness. Now, you might object that all this is well and good as a way for small groups of people to get on with each other, but managing a city or a country is an entirely different matter. And of course, there is something to this. Even if you decentralize society and put as much power as possible in the hands of the small communities, there will still be plenty of things that need to be coordinated, from running railroads to deciding on directions for medical research. But just because something is complicated doesn't mean there's no way to do it democratically. It would just be complicated. In fact, anarchists have all sorts of different ideas and visions about how a complex society might manage itself. To explain them through would go far beyond the scope of a little introductory text like this. All we can say is that a lot of people have spent a lot of time coming up with models for how a really democratic, healthy society might work. But second, just as importantly, no anarchist claims to have a perfect blueprint. The last thing we want is to impose prefab models on society anyway. The truth is we probably can't even imagine half the problems that will come up when we try to create a democratic society. Still, we're confident that human ingenuity being what it is, such problems can always be solved. So long as it is in the spirit of our basic principles, which are, in the final analysis, simply the principles of fundamental human decency. Well, I thought that was a nice tract to give people an introduction of some basic ideas of what we're believing, you know?
Well, that certainly was, Anthony, and thank you very much. And amazingly enough, you exactly filled your time slot, and it's time for our station break. So I'm going to have to bid you goodbye till next time.
All right,
but
take
thank
care,
you
everybody.
So much. All right,
take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles, a show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hello.
All right, Philip.
Okay. I'm here.
Hello, everyone. We are back after the station break, and here is my co-host, Philip Ferrugio.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. You know, what I wanted to talk to you about today, Chuck, with two things. You read my piece earlier. It's a 2-year anniversary of the Charlottesville March, where the people marching said things like, Jews will not replace us, blood and soil, right out of 1933, 34, 35, 36, 37, Germany. And the movie Gentleman's Agreement, which, Chuck, I know you just said that you just watched it again recently, right?
Yes.
Did you watch it recently?
Fascinating
fascinating movie. And I actually have to confess, even though I'm a movie buff, I'm embarrassed to say that I never watched the whole movie all those years, never watched the whole movie. And then about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that's why I spoke to you about it, Chuck, I watched the whole movie. And the movie, for those who haven't seen it, you should see it. It's about anti-Semitism. It's about a writer who is hired by a very progressive news magazine company to do a in-depth piece on anti-Semitism. And he decides, and he's not Jewish, he decides that he's going to pretend that he's Jewish. And he's not going to let anybody at the magazine know, except for the publisher and one other person will know. No one else at the magazine will know. No one else that he runs into will know. They'll all not know that he is really not Jewish. And he goes through this charade, and he meets the niece of the publisher at a party. And, you remember what happened, Chuck. They fall in love, right? Instant attraction. And yeah, she's really a sweet woman. She's very sweet. And but she comes from real Connecticut society, you know. She comes from wealthy, you know.
Exactly.
She comes from wealthy people.
Money.
Yeah, she comes, and the people around her, where she comes from in Connecticut and everything, Manhattan, you know, but she's very, we'll use the word, she's very, you know, liberal, we'll say. And,
well, she thinks she is.
Yeah, and she finds out, or he tells her that he's not Jewish. He's pretending to be Jewish, and they're having a real, you know, romance. And she's really in favor of everything that he's doing, and blah blah blah. And then she invites him to meet her sister and a brother-in-law up in Connecticut. They're gonna throw a party because, you know, they're gonna get married. So they're gonna throw a party for them, and all the friends are gonna be there. And when they get to the party, about half the people aren't there, because she told her sister the truth, and her brother-in-law, he didn't want her to, but he gave her permission after she already did it, whatever. And she told them the truth that, you know, she told them that he's Jewish, I meant, that he's Jewish. And
right.
A lot of people didn't show up at the party because they didn't want to be there because they're anti-Semitic. It's the way things were, and to some extent, would you say, still are, right, Chuck? I mean, you know.
Well, I would say, yeah, today it's more hidden, or at least it was until the last few years. But, But
right.
In some ways, it was almost more insidious because it was hidden.
But that's true. I agree with you. Yeah. So anyway, well, let me just let the people who are listening to this get the rest of this story. So anyway, in the meantime, the fashion editor, a woman played by Celeste Holm, the actress, she befriends him, Philip, you know, and she doesn't know that he's pretending to be Jewish. And she's also a very attractive woman. And actually, he meets his soon to be fiance at a party that she threw. You know, all the people from the magazine came and all the friends and the high society. And it turns out that she is more in line with him on the philosophy of life than his girlfriend, who his fiance. This woman is more outspoken against anti-Semitism. Okay. And he becomes friends with her, but they're friends. And it gets to the point towards the end of the movie where his fiance, played by, I think, you know, Dorothy Malone, I think her name is the actress, very pretty woman, it gets to the point where they're having a lot of problems in their relationship because she's not as, he feels that she's not even really sure about where she really stands on Jews. You know, even though she's not an anti-Semite, she admits that she kept silent. And she always has kept silent when people have said things, anti-Semitic things, in her presence. She never, ever took a stand. Whereas Celeste Holm was very outspoken, you know, throughout the movie about her defense of Jewish people and against anti-Semitism. And the reason why Chuck and I were talking about this is the end of the movie. I hate to ruin it for you folks. It doesn't really matter. It's not the important part of the movie or who he winds up with. It is, but anyway, at the end of the movie, Celeste Holm tells him at her apartment. She made him dinner after he was having a fight with the other one, and he didn't know what to do. Celeste Holm tells him that she and him really should be together, and she really, you know, she's more or less telling him that she loves him, and that she feels that he belongs with her. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is the way it should be. You know, this is the way the movie should be. And he says, I appreciate, you know, he more or less tells me he appreciates her honesty and leaves it at that. And the end of the movie, and this is a funny thing, the end of the movie is that his friend, played by John Garfield, who's Jewish and from the Army, his friend, can't find a place to live for his family. He's from California. He can't find a place in New York, but he has a great job lined up. He's got to turn the job down because of the anti-Semitism, he can't find a place to live for him and his wife. So Gregory Peck's fiance, the one up in Connecticut, she had a empty cottage where she used to live with her first husband, and they were going to actually move in there if they got married. And he was hoping that she would offer it to his friend John Garfield, and she never did. She said it wouldn't work. You know, a Jewish couple being up there in that area of these rich white people, white bread. So that was part of the argument they had originally. So the end of the movie is that she meets with John Garfield and she tells him that him and his wife and kid can live in that cottage. And Gregory Peck goes back to her and he's going to marry her. So
yeah,
why did that happen, Chuck? Why was it now? If that was written into the, if that was in the novel, if that was in the novel, I have my opinion. I want to hear.
Yeah, I haven't read the novel, but okay. First of all, it's Dorothy McGuire, by the way.
No, I'm sorry, Dorothy McGuire. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
But in any case, yeah. Why did that happen? Well, that's a good Hollywood ending. He goes back. You know, he gets the girl back, or the girl gets him back. You know,
I thought it was about, and I agree with you that it was done on purpose. But and if it was from the novel, then the novelist did it on purpose. Here's what I thought, and this is 1947, I think, or 1949, when the film was made. What it was about redemption. They wanted to show the American public that people could be redeemed. And this woman who never took a stand against anti-Semitism, she got her redemption, and he wound up, you know, marrying her. Whereas the way it should have been, in my opinion, I don't know about you, Chuck, the way it should have been is that he should have went with Celeste Holm. You know, but that wouldn't have helped with any redemption.
Yeah, right.
So that's the reason why I thought, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Celeste Holm was more consistent throughout, but...
Yeah, she was real. She was real. The other woman to me was...
Exactly. Yeah. She was real.
So that was that. And then we go back to the column that I wrote, and people heard it, and the anniversary, the 2-year anniversary this past weekend of the Charlottesville situation, and what really I don't want to repeat my column, but basically, what really bothers me is when whether it's against Irish or against Muslims or against anybody, but when you have this virulent, anti-Semitism just pronounced. I mean, people are marching and it's on film. This is 2019 in the United States, and you think you're back in Germany. Really, you think you're back in 1930s Germany. I mean, it's scary. And then the president of the United States, when he's interviewed, the idiot says, well, there were bad people on both sides, and there were some nice people on both sides. And I mean, that's they think about what he. It's like if George Lincoln Rockwell in the 1960s had his march over in Skokie or wherever it was, and there was a big melee that happened afterwards. People that were against the Nazis and the George Lincoln Rockwell's people, and if the president of the United States at the time, let's say it was Eisenhower. In the 50s, or Kennedy or Johnson came out and said, "Well, there were people on both sides that were bad, but there were some nice people too." I mean, come on, you're talking about neo-Nazis. This is scary, Chuck.
Yeah,
scary,
sure.
Really.
Yeah.
No, it's really I can't say this as strongly. That what happened 2 years ago, and then let me ask you, where was Israel? I mean, Israel was founded by many people who were survivors of the Holocaust, or people that were able to get out of the Holocaust before they got Holocausted,
mm-hmm.
and that's Israel, and the leaders of this country did not come out with a condemnation, and because they can't, because Trump is doing what they want him to do, right? The U.S. has given them a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. And so therefore, the Israelis are silent about what happened in Charlottesville. They should have been all over it, And where are the Jewish...
The Israelis are busy trying to get rid of their Palestine problem.
It's funny you said that. I'm going to tell everybody listening a thing that happened to me. 1988, I was working as a marketing director for a corporation back in New York, and I would fly all over the country. Once a week, I would go visit one of our salesmen in a different part of the country. So now I'm flying out to Phoenix. I'm on a TWA wide-body flight, and it was a night flight, and I'm from New York going to Phoenix. And on those big planes, that this is going back to 88, you can walk around and stretch after the plane's up there for a while. So, I got out of my seat, and I think there was even a bar or something, if I'm correct. And so I'm standing with this guy, and I was like 30, 38. This guy was maybe in his mid-40s, and he said he was an engineer. He was an Israeli engineer. Very nice guy. I mean, very well... versed man, very mm-hmm. dressed nice, We're having a really nice conversation. So I asked him about the situation with the Palestinians. This is 1988. So here's what he said to me. I'm almost verbatim. He said, well, let me just say this to you. He said, we look upon the Palestinians like you look upon your southern blacks. He said, they breed like rabbits. They breed like rabbits, he says to me.
Huh.
And he said, yeah. And he said, and if we're not, if we don't do something, they are just going to smother us and with overpopulation in the future, meaning the Palestinians. They breed like rabbits, yeah. Like the southern blacks, you know,
right.
Breed like
huh.
Rabbits. Uh-huh. And he goes to me, listen, what he says to me. And he goes, and I hate to say this, it sounds terrible, but I'm being totally blunt with you. He said, the only choice we have is to drive them into the sea. That's what he said to me.
Huh.
To drive them into the sea. That's 1988.
Yeah.
A very intelligent, bright Israeli engineer, and he was totally honest with me.
Right.
Totally candid.
And... Yeah. And sounding just like a very bright, good German in the era of Hitler, talking about what a threat the Jews were and how they had to get rid of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, things
exactly.
Just come right around. And but I mean, how do people who are the victims of something like that turn around and do it to others?
It's really a phenomenon. It really is, and you're right. And you know, I mean, because I knew a lot of I'm from Brooklyn, and I, you know, I knew a lot of Jewish guys from college, and I spoke to a lot of Orthodox you know, Jewish guys. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I knew a lot of Orthodox Jewish guys because the guys at college would always wear a yarmulke. And you know, there was a big, well, it's one of the biggest, you know, Jewish communities in the United States is right in Brooklyn. And, you know, a lot of these people that I knew in Brooklyn, you know, Orthodox Jewish people, a lot of them had a tremendous anger towards, you know, Muslims and towards Palestinians, obviously. And a lot of them wound up going and to moving to Israel. That's where a lot of the settlements now, the last 30 years, a lot of the settlers are from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, you know, and they're very, very, I hate to say it, but they're very right-wing. You know, they're very ultra right-wing people.
That's interesting because a lot of my friends, especially in high school and college, were Jewish. And I had, it was quite the opposite impression that I had from them. They were not, they certainly, you know, liked the idea of there being an Israel, but they were very open to everyone. Yeah, they did not.
Yeah, well, they were very left. What you're really saying is a lot of them were probably left wing. They were very left wing too.
I suppose that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they were on the left. They were on, and believe me, let me tell you, I went to Brooklyn College, which was the majority of people that went to Brooklyn College happened to be Jewish, and I rubbed elbows with a lot of my friends and the fellow students. Most of them, you know, were Jewish. You know, Jewish and
yeah.
You're right. They would not like the Orthodox ones at all.
Uh-huh.
They were a little more secular. I mean, they were Jewish. They were proud of being Jewish, and
right.
They were secular. And they loved Israel. They loved Israel, but when it came to this craziness, this right wing shit, they didn't go for it. You know.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of Orthodox Jewish people in New York. In Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
who had a political philosophy that was very right wing. It kind of went together, you know. Mm. You vote for, you know, Ronald Reagan, or you vote for George H.W. Bush, and because you're Orthodox Jewish people. A lot of them did that. Now the anti-war movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement, there was a lot of Jewish people, and they were the opposite. You know, they were not right wing at all. They didn't like Nixon. They didn't like Reagan and all that stuff. So
right.
You know, you're right. It's a real disconnect when these people these white supremacists are doing this crap. I mean, I was shocked. And then the guy, like I said in my piece, The guy over in Pittsburgh, Bowers, you know, come on. I'm not saying that. I'm not going to say Donald Trump told him or influenced him to go and kill Jewish people, because the guy had a problem. You know, he had a problem with himself. But the point is when there's a march, a nationally televised, you know, covered incident where the people are saying Jews will not replace us. I mean, I can't, you know, Chuck, I'm talking to you now, and I can't believe that we're actually having this conversation, that that actually happened.
I know. Yeah.
These are college kids. These are not a bunch of, I hate to say it, but, you know, there's not a bunch of redneck KKK guys in Alabama or in Georgia. No.
Yeah.
These are Charlottesville. These are white, mostly men, some girls.
Right.
College, most are college age students, college students.
Right in the middle of the Bible Belt.
Yeah, and they're marching. I mean, you know, it's scary. It's really scary. And then to have the administration, you know, do what they did. And then I read a lot of things about that whole incident. I know we have to go soon, but let me tell you something. The police were told to stand down. There was a couple incidents where anti-fascist. One guy was a black gentleman, an Afro-American guy, got beat up really bad by a bunch of, and the cops were standing by. They were actually they were watching it.
Uh-huh.
I'm serious. Yeah. They were told, the police was told to stand by, stand down.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so this is the climate we have in our nation now, and you watch a movie like Gentleman's Agreement, where everything was much more, you know, much more subtle, as you said before, much more subtle. Like nowadays, what they do to black people in the real estate, they steer them away from certain, you know, neighborhoods. You know, they very casually steer them away. How much time do we have left here with this segment?
We have about 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes.
Okay. Okay, I'm working as a real estate salesman on Long Island, 1986, let's say it was. And I'm working for this, for this Irish guy. He was an Irishman from Ireland, and he was involved years earlier in smuggling arms for the IRA, and him and a few guys got arrested. They got arrested over in Texas. And it was a big case. It was called, something three from over in Texas. You know, that's where they were caught. And now he owns this, you know, real estate company, and I'm doing rentals for him. I'm doing rentals. And he says to me, I have my house in this neighborhood here. I'm having up for rent. I want you to, you know, answer the ads. So the people call in for the ads to rent the house. And I meet this couple, an Indian doctor. Indian doctor, his wife and kid, you know, nice guy, you know, he's a doctor. And I show him the house and they want it. They want the house. I tell him the price. Yes, we want it. Okay. So I said, come by tomorrow. He writes me out a deposit, you know, 1 month deposit as a retainer. Meet me tomorrow. So I go to the office in the morning. I'm all excited. I'm going to get my commission. And the owner calls me over, the Irish guy. And he goes, give him back his check. I said, what are you talking about? He said, give him back his check. I go, why? And he rolls up his sleeve and he goes to me, if his color is darker than this, he smacks his wrist. If it's darker than this, you don't rent to him. I go, you got to be kidding me. He goes, it's not me, Phil. It's not me. It's my neighbors.
He said,
you know, I don't want to cause any problems with my neighbors. You see, I don't live there. So, no, you give him back his money. I quit. Yeah. I mean, this is what you're dealing with.
Good for you, Phil. Yeah.
Oh, what a world. What a crazy world. It's crazy. It's really. Anyway, everybody out there, see Gentleman's Agreement. It's a little bit dated, but yet maybe it's not. And see what you think about the ending.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I second Phil's recommendation. Philip, thank you so much for being here on the show with me each week as my co-host. I really do appreciate that and look forward to next time.
Well, next week we're going to probably have a really good guest. I'm thinking about getting probably Mike Pence to be honest.
Okay.
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding around.
Well, maybe David Duke. Sounds likely. Well,
maybe
huh?
David Duke. Yeah, maybe David Duke will come on.
Yeah, right.
Tell us about the movie.
Who else you?
Okay. I don't want to say any jokes now. I got to go. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you. All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye bye.
Okay. what a joker. What a joker. You know, since Mike Palachuk left the show, Philip has been a godsend. He's really a great help here, and certainly great to have him on the show. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll have Larry Pinkney and M.K. Davis. Here we go. We have an original Black Panther and a Bigfoot researcher right here on the New American Dream. Talk to you after the station break.
It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Schneider will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, everyone. Our next guest of the evening is Larry Pinkney. Larry was an original Black Panther, and we're fortunate to have him on the show every month. And I'm going to try to get him right now. Let's see. Here we go. Okay, we're dialing now, so hope to talk to Larry Pinkney.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck Gregory and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Why, thank you so much. Always great to hear from you, Chuck, and the New American Dream Radio Show. This evening, what I want to do, my little spiel, if you will, is I'm going to call it Returning to Common Sense, which unfortunately is not too common these days. I think that when we look at the political situation in this country, and I'm primarily talking about the United States, we see a lack of civility and a lack of common sense. And let me assign that to everyone, all sides. You know, whether a person is an independent, politically speaking, or a Republican, or a Democrat, or a Green Party supporter, or a constitutionalist, so on and so on. We've got to have common sense. And we have to have civility. Because if we cannot even communicate with each other, what's the point? Indeed, what is the point? Truly, I think that we have reached, or either have reached, or in fact already at a crossroads in America today. We have people who are saying one thing, other people who are saying other things, etc., etc. But, you know, that's the nature of human beings. We're not robots. And I would urge, with all due respect, I would urge people to engage in independent critical thinking. Whenever a person asks me, well, what are you? Well, what do you mean? I'm human. I really do know what they mean, though. They want to put me in some kind of category, some kind of box. You know, you're Black. You're a Black American, so you must be a Democrat. Don't be ridiculous. Don't be absurd. I am, or struggle to be, what I call a pragmatic humanist. A pragmatic humanist, from my point of view, from my perspective, means that in addition to being pragmatic, you try to remember that the ultimate objective is to serve humanity. And that's a struggle. It's not easy. This is what I would urge all of us, not necessarily to be what I call a pragmatic humanist, but we should all be independent critical thinkers, independent. When we fail to think on our own, then we, it's like having a ring in one's nose, no offense intended, but metaphorically speaking, it's like having a ring in one's nose. We're better than that. We're stronger than that. We have, hopefully, a great deal more intelligence than that. We are endowed with the ability to think, which makes us, I think, very different, or at least on a quote-unquote higher plane than perhaps other creatures. Sometimes I wonder. I really do. But I'm urging people, regardless of what you're passionate about, and I, for one, am very passionate about a number of things, especially when it comes to politics and political struggle. However, you remember the, I don't know if the audience remembers anybody in the audience, but I'm sure somebody does. Remember the old TV show, Dragnet? Remember how Sergeant Friday would say, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And this is what I'm urging people to do. Be independent, look for the facts, go to different sources, and for God's sake, think. That's why you have a mind. Use it. That's why we have minds. Use our minds. Otherwise, as I keep saying, what's the point? I think that America, the United States of America, at this point in time in our history, we're sort of on a precipice. But, you know, I can think of times before when we also said, or at least thought, we were on a precipice. We're sort of hanging off that cliff. But I think that this republic, and that's what the United States is, it is a republic, that this republic has the ability, that is to say the people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, yellow people, we have, if we would only use, we have the ability to think outside the box. And I'm urging everyone respectfully to do that, no matter how passionate we are about a certain position or point or idea. Let's at least be able to think outside the box by engaging in independent, operative word, independent critical thought. So I don't want to go on and on and on and belabor this, but I think we really need to remember some of the wonderful things that this country has accomplished. So many people seem to be honing in on our negative. Well, of course there are negatives. I know of no country in the world that does not have negatives. I know of no country in the world that does not have positives. And I'm urging that we be balanced. We become more balanced in our approach, no matter, again, no matter how passionate we are about whatever we feel or whatever our perspective is. So I'm going to go back to what I said at the beginning of this little spiel, and that is, let's return to common sense. Or maybe it should be, let's relearn common sense and let's use it. So I'm going to leave it at that. I want to thank everyone, you know, who listens to and participates in the New American Dream. Think about that. I like the name of this show, this program, okay? The New American Dream. Think about it. We have dreams, but dreams don't come true unless we make them come true. That means we have to get off our posteriors and do something. It means we have to communicate with people, even people, or perhaps even especially people with whom we disagree. So having said that, I'm going to end it by simply saying all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, yellow. We've got a long ways to go, but I think, we certainly would like to think, that we can do it. I'm going to leave it there, and thank you all so very, very much. Take good care, Chuck, and to the audience of New American Dream, stay strong.
Before I let you go, Larry, can you tell our listeners where they might be able to find some of your work?
Well, you can find, thank you for asking, you can find some of my writings at www.blackactivist.org. I believe the writings go all the way back to 1967 and come up to either last year or the year before. I think last year. Some of you will see how I have evolved, how I've grown with my what I engaged in. But Black Activist WG, I don't know, I think I left out the WG. Black Activist WG, which stands for writersguild.org. Yeah, you can check that out. You've checked my writings out in a number of publications, whether it was blackcommentator.com. I'm a former, and I emphasize former, editorial board and board member and columnist with Black Commentator. Or you can check out some of the things I've written on as an associate editor with Intrepid Report. Former associate editor, but I guess I'll just leave it to you. You can find my writings in a number of places. I'm in a book called Saying No to Power. Again, the name of the book is Saying No to Power by William Mandel, introduction by Howard Zinn. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, thanks again. Really appreciate you being on the show, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
It's an honor and a privilege, my brother. Take care.
All right. You know, Larry mentioned the show name, and well, yeah, we have a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Our next guest of the evening is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis comes to us from Alabama, and he is a researcher on a couple of different topics, including Bigfoot and the Zapruder film, and he's a very interesting guy. And I'm going to be trying to get him on the show right now. Here we go. Well, we're calling. I spoke to him earlier, so I'm expecting that he will answer. Well, I'm going to have to try that again. That did not work. So let's give him another try. Sometimes MK is out in the field somewhere, and we have trouble getting him. I hope this isn't one of those times. When I spoke to him earlier, he did indicate that he would be available. So here we are trying again. We may not be having MK tonight after all. I don't know. Well, tell you what. What I'm gonna do instead then is I'm going to play a little conversation I had earlier with Frank Cordero, our weekly columnist in Des Moines, Iowa, who runs the Des Moines Catholic Worker. So here we are. Here is Frank Cordero.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
Thanks for calling back. well, you know, I've been given some thought about what I wanted to talk about, so I had to run down a book preface this as my sharing about my good friend, Father Bob Beck. Bob is a priest from the Diocese of Dubuque, I met him when I was in college. He was our campus minister with another dear priest friend, Father Jack Kissling, at UNI, University of Northern Iowa. Bob really was the guy who taught me how to read scripture. And I do a lot on the basis of the book. The unique thing about Bob is he was the one who helped me crack, you know, the code of how to read the New Testament. And it's through the eyes of literature, not through dogma, teachings, creed. Now, all those things came after the text was written. All the words in the text were done, a done deal before there was a God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, Trinity theology. And it's go back in time. And this is the beauty of, you know, the modern era. You know, I'm a real poo-poo on science, you know, and how it's leading us to destruction. And it's all true. However, there are also interesting things that are also leading us back to the truth, like anthropology, archaeology, and the whole study of ancient languages. Oh, my goodness gracious. What we can now say about the first century Palestine in the midst of what we now know was the Roman Jewish wars and the destruction of the temple in 70 AD and the ongoing wars and the killings and how the Romans oppressed the Jewish, the Second Temple Jewish people to destruction, to oblivion. The text itself was written in those contexts. Bob helped me be able to break that open. His most recent book, I have it right here. It's called Jesus and His Enemies, the Narrative Conflict in the Four Gospels. It goes through all of them, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and just sets up how the narrative is setting these characters in a dramatic conflict that happens in all stages in novels and stories. And there's a resolution to the conflict. Who are the heroes? Who are the enemies? You start looking at it like that, and man, it's clear that Jesus was on the side of the poor and the oppressed, and that he had no tolerance for the dictates of empire, both on the Roman side and on the Jewish temple level. It's just a great way to read it. Look, it's where I fell in love after I had my conversion to look for personal relationship with Jesus. So, and all I'm saying here is this book here, I got it, and I got it because Bob has been teaching his scripture in the same college that our new bishop has been teaching.
Oh, really?
Our new bishop, it was in the philosophy department and the theology department. So I asked Bob, I said, Bob, how sympathetic is the new guy coming to your understanding of scripture? And he just said, not very much. So that does not bear well.
Well, that
so the
kind
beauty
of
this book.
Wow.
The beauty of this book is I have the book, and the foreword, you know, the foreword's like the very beginning.
Right.
Or the acknowledgments. The acknowledgments are the very beginning. And the first five words are enough. Frank Cordero asked for this book.
Wow.
I have been telling Bob, you need to write books because this is the type of stuff people need to hear.
Huh.
And I've got a copy for the bishop. I'm going to give it to him when I meet him, which will be inevitable. Uh-huh. And say, this is where I'm coming from, so be forewarned. Although, you know, trying to break in a new bishop is a daunting task. And for the first time, the guy's going to be younger than me. I don't know what to say about that.
Ah.
By 10 years, I don't know what to say about that. I'm dumbfounded. So much. I hope that was enough for you, Chuck.
That was great, Frank. Thank you.
All right, brother. All right. God bless.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, all right. Well, While I was playing that, I did get to talk to MK, and we're going to have him on after the station break. So we, I'm glad to know that we didn't miss him entirely. Tonight's show is dedicated to the idea that Americans don't need to be idiots. But we are. We don't even know who killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin King. We don't even know that our own government was involved in 9/11, Oklahoma City bombing, that we killed and murdered children at Waco, that Senator Paul Wellstone was murdered. We don't know whether we really landed on the moon. I think we did, but I don't know. We don't really know if there are beings from other planets flying over our cities and farms. We don't know that Bigfoot is real. Well, what do we know? We don't know as much as we think we do, but it doesn't need to be that way. But knowledge is power. You can fix stupid. The mind of an American rules the world. The president, Warren Buffett, Tiger Woods, Katie Couric, John Stewart, Michelin Man. Well, no, stupid, it's you. You're the king of the world. God, Superman, King Midas, all that. It's you. You're more than just a legend in your own mind. You're the man. When the CIA, through the CIA propaganda machine called Radio Free Europe or American Free Press, tells you the Russians are coming or the criminals are coming or terrorists or the Iranians or the Iraqis or Afghans on nuclear-powered blue donkeys or big bees, and you believe it? Well, Zeke, that's how the world's going to go. You're powerful, the most powerful Yahoo ever lived in the history of living, and you are an idiot. And the world's going to burn. You're not an idiot on purpose, but an idiot nonetheless. The CIA persons in the CIA are smart, but they're evil. The actual evil empire, and they control you, the most powerful person in the world. If you were not an idiot, they could not do that, but you are an idiot, and that's a bummer, man. That's a bummer. This message from your local Coca-Cola company. If a plane would hit the Pentagon, we would have seen that short film 1,000 times by now on Chevrolet commercials and Miller Beer commercials and on commercials somehow juxtaposing the Pentagon puppy pellets, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Popemobile. So no plane hit the Pentagon. And because we know that from the lack of Popemobile prevarications, we can be sure that Bush, Rove, Rumsfeld et al. Are liars and murderers. And we can include a bunch more folks in there as well. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, the Knights Obama family across the street. They all know the truth and refuse. Oh, yeah, and that Trump guy. Yeah. They all know the truth. They refuse to tell us. You can't beat the real thing. Always Coca-Cola. Drink Coke. This public service announcement brought to you by Rolaids and the American Spelling Bee Council of Bowling Green. How do you spell Al-Qaeda? Can you use it in a sentence, please? Yes. Al-Qaeda. The evil towel heads that drove the planes into the towers in the Pentagon, and now we have to take our clothes off to fly an airplane, and they do more stuff every day. It seems that we're scared of them, so we don't care if we have freedom of speech or nothing, because we're Americans, and we have car racing. We can still kill animals. We got our guns to keep us safe from deer and elk, and we salute the troops and the flag and the parade and say, way to go killing those kids in the mountains over there. Because it was Bush who did 9/11, not those kids, and we really don't know nothing. The word origin, please? Evil. How do you spell Al-Qaeda? We spell it CIA every time. Thank you.
radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now we're going to try once again for MK Davis to join us, and hopefully the call will go through this time. We really do always look forward to speaking with MK. So here we go again.
Hello.
Well, hello, MK. I'm glad we got through to you this time.
Yes, sir.
Live on the air on the New American Dream Show.
Well, I'm glad to be on. I was looking at some videos and some still pictures from my travels this year, and I've done a lot of on-the-road stuff, and I feel very fortunate to have been able to travel to Death Valley first, and then to travel to Bluff Creek, to where the Patterson Bigfoot film was filmed, to Lovelock Cave, and my latest trip was to visit some friends up, Bigfoot friends up there in Nebraska, and to speak at their little campfire event that they had. So, you know, I've got a lot of miles on me. And one thing I realize from doing the traveling is that I'm not a young person anymore. And it kind of comes home to you If you get back in some of these rough places like Bluff Creek and yeah, you know, so I'd like to do this, I'd like to do that, and the other. And then you get out there, and then next thing you know, your knees are killing you, and you, and I actually got sick and ran a fever. So you know, it's a hazardous thing to go looking for cryptids, whether it's Bigfoot or whether it's Loch Ness Monster or anything, because you're going out into where they allegedly live, and apparently they can live out there a lot easier and much more happy than people can. And so where are you going to find Bigfoot? Probably where people aren't. Maybe not in all cases, but Bluff Creek is basically where people aren't. Some people visit occasionally, but it's largely empty. And I was watching some of these videos, and the friends of mine that went with me down there, it would be, I know some people who've gone down there by themselves, but it's really, really high risk. And when I look back at this, you know, I realize that if I had to recommend, this is probably the one of the best places to go if you want to see a Bigfoot, but it's probably, I don't recommend anyone going. I have to take that stance because of the elements of danger. They're multiple elements of danger. You go down there, whether my friend Don Monroe fell and injured himself pretty good. He still can't hear out of one ear. He just took a nosedive. Well, if you did that by yourself, you probably would be in a heap of trouble if you did that. And then there's the element of bears. And not just bears, but also cougars. And it's got the highest population of bears anywhere in North America. Black bears, that is. Pardon?
I just said, wow.
Yeah, oh, okay. Bears around here, you know, we got a lot of deer. And bears are about as thick as the deer are here.
Huh.
So, you know, it's not unusual to run into a bear there. I ran into one really close up. And the bear was walking toward me, and I was walking toward the bear. We're both looking down, and and I heard him breathe, you know, take a breath. And I looked up, and this bear is just, I mean, we're only seconds from bumping into each other. And I hollered out there. And it just so happened my friend that was with me behind me, his nickname was Bear. So he responds, you know, and I said, no, Bear.
That and, almost and sounds like a joke.
So it was kind of a three-way holler, you know. I was trying to tell him there was a bear, and he thought I was hollering for him. But, you know, I had a camera around my neck, and the camera was cut on, ready to go. And, you know, I never used it. You know, that's how it affects you. Unexpectedly, like.
Yeah.
It freezes you. And, sure. And we looked at each other. I stared right into that bear's eyes. He had these like chocolate brown eyes.
Yeah.
And we kind of communicated there in a strange way. I could tell that he was not going to jump on me. I don't know how I could tell it, but I could just tell it. And so I communicated. I said, "You're not going to do anything, are you?" And he says, "No." And he just took a leap off the side of the road, and I went over there and looked, and it was straight down. I mean, it was just straight on down to the creek.
Wow.
So I know he must have tumbled in some kind of way. I thought to myself, I must look really fearsome to make a bear jump off a cliff. Or maybe me and my friend who looked fearsome together. He had a 9mm, but it was, you know, if the one of me, he had me. But, you know, to get me, he was going to have to eat plastic pipe, because I had a little plastic pipe walking stick. Uh-huh. And then he was going to have to go through the backpack, which I was going to put between me and him. So I had a little plan there in the heat of the moment. I kind of made a little plan there, you know, but it was the luck of the draw, really, because at the time period, the females had cubs. And if it had been a female with cubs, you know, that would have been a whole other story.
Yeah, I think you would have been in trouble then.
Right. And so, you know, we went back to Bluff Creek this time. As a friend of mine went with us. He was real nervous about us splitting up. He didn't want anybody splitting up because he was afraid of that very thing, you know, that you know, that an animal take you out or whatever's out there, even Bigfoot, you know, which is a mystery element out there that nobody knows for sure if you're safe or not. I don't know if anybody that's ever been confirmed, you know, harmed by Bigfoot, but there's, you know, if you read some of the books like the Missing 411 books by Dave Blindis, it makes you wonder, you know, because people will disappear in a mysterious way, and they'll in the circumstances, you know, they'll find they find a child two miles away up on a mountain, you know, a 2-year-old child. It's not how would a child's not going to do that. Something had to carry the child up there. You know, so, you know, people wonder about that, and you know, he's written several books chronicling missing people in national parks and some national forests, but you read his books and it'll break your heart. You know, I've always felt like, you know, when I went into the woods that I was coming out. Maybe that's a little bit of hubris. But, you know, I went in one time, and it was back in 2009, and the gates were locked, and we just hiked in. It was 8 miles back in there, and lo and behold, here comes a white pickup truck, and it's a game warden, not a game warden, but a Forest Service employee. And he came in from another way, the Fish Lake Road, he said. And he said, "Look here, guys," he says, "I don't normally give rides, but you could die back here. So I'm going to give you a ride out." And it puzzled me why he thought that we could die. You know, and we were, it was three of us, four of us.
Right.
No, not to them. Yeah. So I wondered why he thought, and I wonder that to this day, why he thought that we could die back there. And why, you know, he needed to break the rules and give us a ride back. And so the Forest Service people, I'm sure they deal with these areas a lot, the Bluff Creek area especially, that they know things that they don't talk about. And so, you know, I assume that he must know something that he didn't want to fully explain, but you know, we talked, and this is a guy that he said it was the first time anybody'd been back in there. He opened the gate himself up at Fish Lake, and nobody'd been back in there in over a year. And when we got back there, it was a huge landslide. It had taken the road out. you know, that's where we met him, at the landslide. That's just how wicked rough this country is. You know, where you can be walking along and a boulder fall on you from way up the hill. It might have been rolling for a mile. You know, just things that can happen to you out of the blue. And so, you know, it's maybe that's what he was talking about. I found out later on that somebody else had been back in there in the winter, believe it or not. It was a lady. And they found her, they found her body parts strewn all over the place. And I didn't ask any questions, but I thought to myself, don't the bears hibernate here in the winter?
Yeah, really?
You know, if it must not have been a bear that did it. And maybe a mountain lion or a cougar or something like that. I'm not gonna say Bigfoot, because it's very tempting to do that, but I don't know. I don't want to ascribe, you know, too much to a Bigfoot. You know, that I know that they would kill you or harm you.
Yeah.
Or I don't know that they would.
But I don't know. You know, there's already you know, too many people that would sooner shoot one than anything else if they ever did actually come across one. We don't need to make them worse than they are.
Well, you know, you're right there. You know, the same way with cougars and stuff. You know, if we really knew what cougars do at night, you know, it would shock you. A friend of mine up there, when I was in Nebraska, she showed me two game cams in her yard where she had cougars in her yard at night. And this is in Nebraska with cornfields all around. You know, they're not supposed to be cougars there. But she's got two photos that are clear.
Huh.
It was and these cougars came up to, I mean, they were right there among her flowers.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And there was some people in a neighborhood in California that set up game cams and took pictures of cougars walking between the houses. This was a development. You know, it wasn't even the woods at all.
Yeah.
But at nighttime, when it gets nighttime, you know, they lose that fear.
Yeah.
And they'll come sneaky.
And heck, we built up all their, you know, places where they might normally go. They've got to come into our place.
Well, it's sort of like that. And you're down there in Florida. They got the Florida panther, they call it, which is an southeastern version of the cougar. I remember when they thought that all of those panthers down there were gone. They hired a man with dogs from out west to come to Florida and see if he could find a cougar. He found 60.
Uh-huh.
Well, they thought they were all gone, and they thought we'd be lucky if they found one. They found 60.
Yeah.
Well, so they immediately started building these, you know, fences and stuff where they wouldn't get hit on the roads. Right. And did what they could, you know, to make it safer for them. That's how shy and retiring a cougar is, and they can live right there close to you and come all around, and you never know it. You know, unless you put out a game cam or something that catches them. Then I don't know if anybody will believe your picture.
Yeah, probably not. They'll say you photoshopped.
Right. In this day and age, people are so dubious about everything, and so I don't. Yeah. You know, if a picture of a Bigfoot, it's hard to get pushed. You know, you can put it on the net, and nobody believes it hardly.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got your rare animals. You know, like a jaguar. They get pictures of jaguars on game camps north of Phoenix, right. Arizona, and the state of Arizona won't even admit it, you know, that they're there, but they, you know, they definitely are there. So, you know, it's the wild world that we live in. It's wilder than we think, you know. Huh. And so all you good people out there that go into the woods, keep your eyes open and your ears open and be careful. There's lots of things that can happen to you out there. And whether if you're looking for Bigfoot, you know, you get surprised by a bear or cougar or snake. A snake, a friend of mine, he just passed away. He got bit by a copperhead at night going to his car, and it nearly killed him. Yeah, all of his organs shut down, and he managed to make it through that. About a year later, he got hot during the summer, and all of the symptoms came back, and his organs started shutting down again. And it did it several times, and then it weakened him to the point where he finally just run his health to the point where he passed away.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and that was not a terribly venomous snake, a copperhead. They are venomous, but it just caught him, and, you know, he had little resistance for it or something, and it just worked him over.
Wow.
So what happens, you know, if you're out in the bush and you're in Florida, you know, one of those big eastern diamondbacks hit you, the hazards are many. Anybody that wants to go looking for cryptids and they have to go out in these areas where people aren't, please be careful. Take all your communication devices and try to stay safe.
Of course, they may not work out there, but
yeah. Well, there's always that problem too. but they make these transponders now that communicate with satellites.
That's good.
If you can get an open sky, you know, you can.
You're going to be out there. Yeah.
Yeah. People can find you, you know.
MK, it's been great visiting with you tonight. I'm glad, you know, we got a little bit longer than usual, and I enjoyed it very much. So,
yeah, me too. I've got a whole other half of the year to go. We'll see what happens. I'm looking for something to happen there. You know, I've spent an inordinate amount of time out in the woods, and I know a lot of other people are too, and that's what it takes.
Well, all right. Well, thank you, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
All righty. Thank you, Chuck.
All right. Thanks a lot, MK. Now we bring you the New American Dream Masterpiece Classic Playhouse Theater Something Something. Real voices with a message you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News. Tonight, Charles Bukowski. This is a world where everybody's got to do something. You know, somebody laid down this rule that everybody's got to do something. They got to be something. You know, a dentist, glider pilot, a narc, a janitor, a preacher, all that. Sometimes I just get tired of thinking of all the things I don't want to do, places I don't want to go, like India, like getting my teeth clean, save the whale, all that. I don't know. That was Charles Bukowski. It was true I didn't have much ambition, but there ought to be a place for people without ambition. I mean, a better place than the one usually reserved. How in the hell could a man enjoy being awakened at 6:30 a.m. by an alarm clock, leap out of bed, dress, sports speed, shit, piss, brush teeth and hair, and fight traffic to get to a place where essentially you made lots of money for somebody else and were asked to be grateful for the opportunity to do so? Charles Bukowski. The average American citizen male breadwinner is a horror to behold. He's a sight to make one vomit blood and gut and hope all up. Even when he smiles, even when he is kind, even when he's a winner, a lover, a father, a playboy, a champ, he stinks. He's rot. He's a flower without a head, a plant without a root, a slab of meat butchered and dressed in clothing. Charles Bukowski. Well, folks, that pretty much wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. I thank you for joining me tonight. Hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomflips.com. And remember, it is listener-supported radio. So head on over to freedomflips.com or revolution.radio and show them some love. And I'm going to take us out with a song. Thanks once again. If my words did glow with the gold of sunshine, and my tunes were played on the harp unstrung, would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold it near as it were your own? It's a hand-me-down. The thoughts are broken. Perhaps they're better left unsung. I don't know, don't really care. Let there be songs to fill the air. Ripple in still water where there is no pebble tossed nor wind to blow. Reach out your hand if your cup be empty. If your cup is full, may it be again. Let it be known there is a fountain that was not made by the hands of men. There is a road, no simple highway, between the dawn and the dark of night. And if you go, no one may follow. That path is for your steps alone. Ripple in still water when there is no pebble tossed nor wind to blow. You who choose to be must follow. But if you fall, you fall alone. If you should stand, and who's to guide you? If I knew the way, I would take you home. Da-da-da-da-da.
Welcome to Revolution Radio, where you, the listeners, are in charge. Here at Revolution Radio, we present weekly broadcast hours of news and information each and every day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial-free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, in which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio,
where information never sleeps. Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents, imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all the banks.